Snake-eyed sawtooth behemoth we call the animation industry. Rolls over the countryside just a slicing and a chopping and a deflavorizing on in its path. We pause to remember them furry, more independent critters running for their lives in its wake. The ones doing it for the love, trying to make the rent, trying to make the footage count, trying to get bought by Nickelodeon, trying not to get bought by Nickelodeon. As they cross the great flaming desert to the temperature-controlled vault where the grapes of wrath are stored. This is their story. These are their words. That ain't a corset. I would never need a corset. This is the Animation Show Podcast.
This is the Animation Show Podcast. My name is Taylor Jessen, and I am talking to Steve Dildarian, the creator of Angry Unpaid Hooker, a small short in the Animation Show Year 4, which also has led to the creation of the new series, The Life and Times of Tim, which Steve is even now, as we speak, producing in a little hidden studio somewhere at the corner of X and Y, mere minutes from the 5 freeway here in scenic downtown Glendale/Burbank adjacent. Steve, how the hell are you?
Doing all right.
A quick life story, please, a short précis of where you've been and how you got to where you are now.
Oh, I've always done advertising until recently. Grew up in Jersey, went to Glassboro State, and then School of Visual Arts in New York. And forever, you know, I've been doing TV commercials, a lot of beer commercials. Budweiser's been my main thing for a long time. And then through that, got some other opportunities and started drawing and a bunch of different things that led me to making this short animated film. So kind of series of events led to me stumbling into animation by accident, almost.
When did you say to yourself, good grief, I've got to get into advertising, and when did you say, hey, look at me, I'm in advertising?
I don't think I said either of those things, but...
I bet neither of those sentences actually passed your lips, but...
You know, honestly, I knew, like, in high school I was going to do comedy writing of some kind, and went to college, actually, to try and get into TV writing, and then just kind of switched. I think it just seemed more realistic for me to go to New York instead of LA at the time. So I thought advertising made sense, and before you know it, I started doing well in some of my classes. So in the back of my head, writing TV shows is always plan A, but once advertising kind of took off, it was hard to turn back. I started doing Little Caesars commercials when that was popular, pizza, and then the Budweiser Lizards thing caught on, and that ran for years. So, you know, I was enjoying it enough and getting enough creative freedom where I never missed not doing TV. You know, a lot of the advertising I ended up doing was more like comedy writing and sketch writing. So I had no complaints.
That's really interesting that you felt more free. I mean, didn't you feel, weren't the clients breathing down your neck at all?
You know, I was lucky enough to fall into some pretty great agencies and great clients. You know, doing Little Caesar's Pizza when that was popular, that was as good as it got at the time. That was the funniest stuff on TV. So it was, you know, an ideal situation to be in. And then that opened up doors at other agencies. And Budweiser, almost to the point of it being a joke, their stuff is sketch comedy more than it's advertising.
Yeah.
It's not really even talking about beer or anything about the product. It's two lizards saying they're going to kill the frogs, you know. So it was really just character-driven dialogue stuff. It was just as fun as you can ever hope for in that business.
You name-checked the Honeymooners as a major influence. Was that being recycled on TV when you were growing up?
When I grew up, that was on every night of the week at 11:30 after The Odd Couple. So those reruns, that was just a staple on, you know, on Channel 11 in New York area every night for most of my growing up.
Lucky you.
Yeah, they don't play it anymore, I guess. I don't see it out here. And that show, it was just, I guess it was just the character, and maybe that's why I write a lot of character-driven stuff and a lot of underdog stories I tend to write. But just Ralph Cramden in that show, without overthinking it, it just, to this day, you know, it makes me giggle as soon as he comes on the screen. I don't even know how to explain it, especially when I look back at the episodes now. I didn't think about it growing up, but now you watch it and it's like, wow, that stuff is pretty out of touch with the way people are now. A lot of the stuff is timeless comedy, but a lot of it is like the way the wives are treated and the attitudes. Just threatening to punch your wife, you know, you don't see that a lot.
Yeah, the givens for any comedy premise in those days have changed a lot.
But, that show just stuck with me. I was in the Honeymooners fan club. I still carry my card in my wallet from the Royal Association for the Longevity and Preservation of the Honeymooners.
That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, and I used to work at this pizza place where a lot of the guys knew the show really well. And as far as trivia goes, you know, I'm probably a little rusty now, but you couldn't throw too many things at me that I wouldn't know.
Well, unfortunately, I can't test you on that. My knowledge of it is minimal.
Yeah.
You know, I have the complete Monty Python matching tie and handkerchief memorized, but that's, you know, we all memorize things in different directions.
Yeah.
How did the thing begin to bite at your heels again, where you decided you wanted to do something that could, well, was the making the animated short an attempt to get a short and to get that out there in pursuit of TV, or did you just make the short as a one-off?
Well, basically, after the Budweiser Lizards were doing well, I got some opportunities to write some pilots down here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of doing that each year, slipping in one, and I got to write a couple of scripts for different networks, but they never really went anywhere. And I was kind of keeping the whole thing at arm's length, really doing advertising as my main job. And over those years, different projects came up. Like I said, it was kind of an accident that I ever did any animation, because I did one project for Budweiser where I ended up drawing. And on the side, during that time, I started painting. I started doing these little acrylic paintings. And so for the first time, I was doing visual things, and people liked it. And I had a kind of distinct style, the way I drew characters. So that was just in the back of my head. And over those same years, I started getting in the booth and doing voices. And, you know, I had been doing advertising for 10 years and never once got behind the mic. So out of nowhere, people liked my voice. Before you know it, it was in this donkey commercial on the Super Bowl where the donkey wanted to be a Clydesdale. And that was my first voiceover job. And before you know it, everyone's asking me to read a voice.
Since I was born, I dreamed of being a Budweiser Clydesdale. Only problem is, I was born a donkey. So all my life, I practiced the Clydesdale walk and the Clydesdale pull. I even tried hair extensions on my lower legs. And then came my big interview. They looked me in the eye and said, "What makes you think you can be a Clydesdale, son?" And what was my answer?
When I was just a writer, writing things, suddenly I realized, hey, I can draw stuff, and I can get in the booth and read it. And then I started tinkering around with iMovie, and then I realized I could edit. So before you know it, I was waiting for an opportunity to do something with all these things. And basically, this script I wrote, you know, Angry Unpaid Hooker, I was going to do it live action. I just wrote it because I thought it was a funny story.
Mm-hmm.
I had no plans. I'm not really particularly a student of animation or, honestly, even a big fan of it. I'm not drawn to it. But with this particular project, it was like, maybe animation works. If nothing else, I can make it. I didn't have the resources or the wherewithal to get a film crew together and try to shoot it live action. So I'm like, let me just see if we can't string a few still frames together and make it move.
It's a studio in a closet. That's the process, man.
Yeah.
You can do it all. You can do that now.
It was amazing. It's really a story of Mac and the way the software lets you do things. This project would never exist if we didn't have Photoshop and iMovie. Those two things made us start a whole career.
And probably thousands of others as we're speaking right now.
Crazy.
They're going for it. Is there any touchstone for artists in terms of the way you draw? I mean, it kind of reminds me in form and execution of some of the work of Tom Snyder Productions, you know, Dr. Katz.
Okay, yeah. Well, wouldn't Dr. Katz, you could draw some comparisons maybe in the tone and all the look of the drawings. I'd have to look at that again. I love that show, but I wouldn't think this looks too much like it. Especially with the jiggly thing they always did.
Yeah, no, it more reminds me of it in the terms of the pacing and the improvisational quality.
Yeah, because as far as the drawings, even though we are a little more polished with it now, it's all based on just my drawing style of pretty flat 2D, lack of knowledge of perspective and things like that. And even though we've got it down now, it's a hard thing to replicate because, you know, whenever a good illustrator tries to go backwards and draw poorly, it shows, it looks like you're trying to be crude and looks like you're trying to make it look bad. And with my stuff, it's always me as a non-illustrator doing my best to make it look super realistic. And if I'm drawing an old man with a cane, it's going to look silly, and to a trained eye, that looks awful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the perspective's off, the limbs are wrong, it makes no sense. But to me, I couldn't draw it any better if I wanted to. So it's like a weird finished product, I think, where it's naive and crude because it just has to be, but there's an attention to detail and effort to make it perfect.
It's got this great sheen of I am trying.
Yeah.
Which is very charming.
Yeah, that's what I always said about the style. It's like, You know, it's like if a 5-year-old kid spent a year on a drawing, that's what it would come out like. He just was really trying to make it perfect and put a lot of thought into it. So that's kind of the look we settled on. Beyond that, it's the style of the show. It's just, I think the purity of that is in everything. The voiceovers, I try to cast relatively real people and keep it not self-consciously improv-y, but just natural. We try to, paraphrase each take. So it's not like reckless going off on tangents improv as much as just keep it fresh, keep everyone on their toes, and read the lines different each time. So the jokes are on paper. I know the beats are trying to hit, but if you have sharp actors who can just reinvent it every take, hopefully it's got a fly-on-the-wall quality where it feels a little bit like real life, more than most animation, at least popular animation, where it's, you know, very much line-by-line readings, and the actors are never in the same room. With ours, everyone has to be in the same room.
Yeah, in your basic corporate animation structure, you hardly ever get actors all working at either at the same time or, God forbid, in one room and doing huge takes.
We have to. It's really the stamp of the show. It drives everything.
Okay, so tell me, give me a quick précis of between 2006, when you first finished the short, and going through development at several different places to where you are now.
Once we made the film, I was pleasantly surprised at the reaction it got. I would have been happy if anyone just thought it was watchable, but people really latched onto it. First, the person who's my agent now, Greg Hodes at Endeavor, he saw it and just, for me, it would have been enough if he just liked it and said, let's talk, but he just flipped for it, said, we got to go in business together and this is going to be a TV show, there's no doubt in my mind. And he just, that enthusiasm just never stopped.
You got to love that.
Yeah, it was amazing. It kind of really caught me off guard. And so we started doing that, and before long, he had like meetings at 20th Century Fox and they were interested. And before anything was official or really happening, the HBO, you know, Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen said we got in, which I thought was ridiculous. I'm like, really? It's like, it was just one thing after another. And then before you know it, I got a call a few days before the festival and it said, want to make sure you're here. We're going to give it an award. I'm like, are you joking? This is something I made on my laptop. And they said, you know, it's so crude and underdone, we can't give it best short film, so we're going to invent a new category of best animated short, which we've never done before, because the judges want to make sure it gets something. I said, that's amazing. I'm on a plane tomorrow.
That's lovely.
So I went and went by myself, because no one else could make plans that fast.
Did they make you a special plaque?
Yeah, it's like a glass, pointy plaque. It was nice. But just being there was amazing. Just to be in that kind of environment where there was such a supportive atmosphere. Partly because, I don't know if you've ever been to that festival, but, no one, it's not really a sense of competition that I've sensed, because everyone's doing their own thing. There's improv groups next to stand-up comedians, next to filmmakers, next to animators. So it was more like comparing notes of what everyone does in a supportive way.
Yeah.
So for me to just have so many people come up and just say, wow, it's the most original thing I've seen in a long time, It was really amazing, and I kind of just knew in the back of my head that things were going to happen, because you can't fake enthusiasm. I could just tell the way people were reacting. It was beyond anything I kind of expected, and I knew in my head we stumbled on it by accident, just by not knowing any better, and then being limited by our talent and our knowledge. You know, it was just me and my girlfriend trying to string together some stills against an audio track, and kind of stumbled on an interesting look.
What form does this series take, and how's it going to play on HBO?
They probably don't want me getting into too much detail.
Oh, that's cool. No, whatever you can.
In general, we're just, telling Tim's story. The short film is not completely indicative of the kind of stories we tell, because if you've got a character who's calling prostitutes every week,
right.
It's a strange thing to build on.
This is not going to be the big comedy premise.
Yeah.
The prostitute will not leave.
It's too far off from it. It is him getting into some pretty messed up situations and making some bad decisions, but usually from the fault of others around him and getting bad advice.
Right.
But it's just a guy who can't catch a break, and I was pleasantly surprised at how, the more I thought about it, it took on a life of its own, and the world just fell into place. And you know, getting back to something like The Honeymooners or something, when you've got such a strong foundation of a character that works, it's not hard to add the layers and develop the world around them, you know, without trying too hard or overthinking it. It's just, what's that guy's life like? What happens to him tomorrow when he wakes up after him and his girlfriend have talked about this incident, you know? Life goes on.
Is it going to come out in tens, 15s, half hours?
The way we're making it is a half-hour show comprised of two segments.
Variety, when they talked about the series, mentioned that HBO hadn't done any animation since Spawn. It's, if that's true, that's fascinating. I mean, that a network in this decade would not have poked their finger in the animation pool for such a long time.
Yeah, true. I don't know much about the details of that, but I know at least how they reacted to my piece, and they just thought it was a good fit, because when I talked about it all, it was like, I want to do an animated show that really has no business being animated. There's no reason for it. We don't take advantage of the medium. We don't do anything that you couldn't do in live action. It's a pretty understated show, and it's a dialogue-driven show about a guy living his life in the city. So I think a lot of those things just fit with their overall taste level and, you know, the kind of stories they want to tell.
Tim, I'm very concerned.
You saw one of the posters, Stop the Pervert?
Timothy, I have no idea what you're talking about, but no.
Oh. What's the problem?
As I understand, you attended Susan's birthday party just for the free cake.
That's not true.
That makes you a hound dog without hind legs.
I was singing the song.
I advise you to shut your yapper at this point.
Okay.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to ban you from all company birthday parties.
Really?
You are not to stand within 500 feet of anyone's birthday celebration.
That's a little harsh. Where do I stand?
Outside.
Is there a date for initial broadcast?
That stuff seems to be elusive, but I know that it's saying September now.
It is always an elusive thing,
yeah.
this scheduling dream.
Yeah.
How deep in production are you now?
A little past the halfway mark. We started back last October, and nothing's finished, but we're a little more than halfway through.
Did they give you like a commitment of 13 or 26 or something?
Yeah, we're doing 10 episodes, which is more than enough. I mean, 5 would have been plenty. It's just a lot of work, and, you know, the first time out, when you're trying to make the right impression, you know, you don't want to overwhelm the production too fast, because at this stage, I'm trying to personally be involved as much as I can, and there's only so many hours in the day.
You're Tim, correct? The how many other people in the cast, the voice cast?
It's pretty small. We try to have about 8 people that we just rotate and bounce around. But half of us are just friends from San Francisco who I used to work with and know from advertising. So me and MJ, who plays my girlfriend in the show, plus Bob Morrow and Matt Johnson. You know, Bob plays Debbie the hooker, and Matt plays a bunch of roles. That's half of it, so it's really non-career voice people. And then the rest of it we supplemented with people in L.A. who are amazing, and then some of the roles they've taken on have just put such another layer on the show that wasn't there before. So now we've got a good little group, and we don't want to mess with it too much. We don't want a big string of people come in and out, because with the good ones, they can have enough range where, you know, you don't feel it. You don't notice that there's only one guy in the whole episode, 2.5 the roles.
Right. How many in the animation crew?
We got a pretty small group. It's like maybe 18 people. Just a couple illustrators, a couple After Effects artists, editors. It's a small little group here.
In terms of the look, has anything leaked yet that anybody can look at to see what the show's going to look like?
I don't think, no. Not as far as the show version. It's just the short films that kind of float around. And, you know, that's a pretty good indication of where it's going, but the short films are a little more primitive looking. We cleaned it up a bit. You know, you want to tell realistic stories about the city. You don't want it to be so crude that you can't get lost in that world a little bit. Plus, in the shorts, I drew everything. Now I just draw the faces. I was convinced that my drawings are not as good as I believed. So.
Well, is there anything people haven't asked you about it yet that you wish they had?
People haven't asked me too much, only because we're just getting started here as far as, you know, the show and the shorts are, in a way, you know, two different things. The show is a lot of new characters, unexplored territory, really working on the dynamic between things, and the shorts was just, it was really just Tim getting into, I don't even know if you saw all three. Angry Ampe Hooker was the first 3 shorts we made.
Yeah, is there a place online where one can see all of the earlier work?
Yeah, I've got, it's just the 3 shorts, I've got them on a Mac page. SteveD5 at Mac. Or I don't know what the page is. I'd have to send it to you.
Could we Google Steve D5? I will...
Or just the title of the film, you know, Google that. But yeah, the shorts, it's all inspired by that, and we made a conscious effort to not make it too polished, because that is the charm of it, was how underproduced it was. So compared to, you know, most other shows, it's going to look pretty raw. Compared to the shorts, it's going to look pretty slick.
Well, awesome. Well, Steve, thank you very much for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.
Good luck with the production.
Thank you.